It's episode 9, Uncle Monty's Variety Show. Monty here, El Greco at my side. He doesn't want to be called El Greco anymore. What the fuck is up with that?
I just want to be called Vanilla Thunder.
I think that sucks. I don't like Vanilla Thunder.
Look, it's my decision. It's Vanilla Thunder.
That's too bad. You can call yourself whatever you want. I like El Greco.
Okay.
You're fucking Greek.
Dude. All right, so how's your week? What do you have to talk about?
Well, we got to do the intro, so you're doing the intro with me right here. This is the intro that we do.
All right.
So fucking introduce.
Hi, I'm Vanilla Thunder, and I'm with Uncle Monty.
No, fucking represent. This is the show. We got a lot of things to plug here, okay? We've got the fucking show, which is at www.unclemonty.net, where you go to get all your Uncle Monty shit. You go there to get your Monty merch. We got the t-shirts. We've got the fucking Ben Panther t-shirts there, okay? If you agree Black Panther should have been played by Ben Affleck, this is the place to go to get your shirts.
Right.
If you also like telling people to smoke corn, you fucking Larry, this is where you get your shirt. What else do you get there?
You heard the man. Well, we're going to be blowing out a whole new Steve Bannon collection. So, kind of inspired by his politics, inspired by his aesthetic, inspired by his look and just artistic sensibilities, his fashion sensibilities, is going to inspire a whole new wardrobe. So you can expect to see a lot of Steve Bannon-related merchandise.
What would you describe as Steve Bannon's aesthetic?
White.
A lot of khaki.
White. Army jacket.
A lot of camo. Camo, right. And khaki is going to be a theme in the Bannon collection. Look for that. Also, listen, if you come to this podcast, we assume you like comedy. We assume you like to get out of your fucking stinky fetid hole where you sit listening to podcasts all day and go and see some live entertainment. So come to the UncleMonty.net ticket marketplace and buy your stand-up comedy tickets there. We got tickets from shows going on all over the country from the best comics. Come and buy them at our place, because when you do, we get a small percentage of the sale. It helps keep the podcast going. Plus, it's a place to find out about shows, find out about comics you might not know about. So come and check it out. Okay? That's enough. We're not going to do any more except to tell you also to go to social media, Uncle Monty Pod, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You know what it's all about, okay? Now, listen, we're going to start the show now, episode 9. Boom.
Hit it, Joe!
You all know my Uncle Monty, don't you?
Monty the Magnificent, at your service!
Tell anybody how you are!
You coming to see Uncle Monty's big benefit show?
You know, a long time ago, being crazy meant something. Nowadays, everybody's crazy.
Ashtrays can't talk.
All right. So let's talk.
Hey, no more of that throat clearing. No more of that coughing. No more sniffing. People think you're doing coke. We got a drug-free place here, okay? Hit it.
All right. So we're selling Ben Affleck Black Panther t-shirts because I think
we already covered that.
Yeah, you and I both agree Black Panther should have been played by a white actor. I think that reflects our politics.
I think so.
So, we're white, but there's always room to be whiter.
That's true.
Right. And I think this was something a lot of white people, and maybe black people feel. Black people probably have always wanted to be a little whiter.
Right.
And I think Trump has liberated a lot of people, white people and minorities, to explore their inner whiteness.
It's right to be white.
Right. So, you know, I think there would have been a point in time where casting a white actor to play Black Panther would have been considered tone deaf.
Right.
It would have been considered insensitive. But I think in this political climate, I think it's fine to have a white actor play Black Panther. And I was thinking of white actors who should play Martin Luther King.
Uh-huh.
All right. So let me name a few actors I would suggest to be a great Martin Luther King.
Hit me.
All right. Steve Buscemi.
Okay.
John Goodman.
Gotcha.
Danny Ainge.
Uh-huh.
Woody Harrelson.
Right.
and Jared Kushner.
Now, do you want these guys in blackface, or do you want them? I mean, if you're full on proud to be white, why not let your white flag fly?
Blackface is stupid. That's insensitive. It's wildly inappropriate. We're talking about decades, maybe a couple decades. What slavery went on for? How many decades? Two, three.
What is this, History Channel?
Right, but no, that's wildly inappropriate. But Jared Kushner, I think, would make a great Martin Luther King, because Jared Kushner's not afraid to do what he does. I mean, Martin Luther King was courageous, right? I mean, he was bold. There was something spiritual about him. And I think the same about Jared Kushner. He's not afraid to take a kind of unpopular sort of approach to politics, using politics for his own personal financial gain. Don't you think that's courageous? Along this theme, here are a couple like white actors that I think would have been fantastic for Black Panther, not just Ben Affleck. Are you ready? Gary Oldman, William Neeson, Tom Sizemore, Harvey Keitel, and maybe Sean Spicer. What do you think of those as Black Panthers?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're trying to kind of have a vehicle for a comeback. Black Panther for Sean Spicer could have worked well.
Right. So they also talk about how the new Wonder Woman movie was a real woman empowerment film, right? It took a strong feminist approach to it, you know?
Yeah.
If you look back at the original script for Alien, Ripley wasn't even in there, right? It was the producers, not the writer, who added Ripley and gave it this sort of feminist spin, right? Which made the movie really rich and robust. Some would say, I think it should have been all men. There should have been no Ripley in Aliens. You know, maybe the alien could have been played by a woman.
I thought it was.
Well, listen to this. So the woman that they got to play Wonder Woman is considered beautiful, is considered somebody who is...
Gal Gadot.
Right.
Israeli, hot.
But I think what she does is it makes certain men uncomfortable. And I think it would have been better cast by... Here's a few porn stars I think would have been a better Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Asia Kira.
Yeah.
Stormy Daniels, because she's hot right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wendy Whoppers. Do you remember her?
Mm-mm.
Oh, she's unbelievable.
Christy Canyon.
Yeah, she was a natural. Those weren't breast enhancements. Those were natural. Yeah, she was fantastic. There's this Cambodian woman, Tia, at the donut shop on 9th and Judah, who's unbelievable.
An unknown.
Yeah, and then there's the stripper who used to come to my dance aerobic class, who had, like, literally... There's D cups, but are there E cups?
I think so. There's even, like, double E's.
Are there J cups? I think she had J cups.
She had Z cups.
Right. So she could have been a fantastic Wonder Woman. So what about Spider-Man, this idea of like a young Spider-Man? Couldn't he be old, like, you know, kind of like Steve Bannon old? Couldn't you imagine like a kind of a man of a certain age for Spider-Man?
Why would you stop at Bannon? Why not go full Kirk Douglas?
Kirk Douglas? Did you see Kirk Douglas
coming out?
Was he on? It was on the Emmys, right?
I don't know. I don't watch those fucking
shows. They wheeled him out. And he had plastic surgery at 100. What the fuck does a 100-year-old man need plastic surgery for?
He probably had it at 50. Why not double down?
Oh, he doubled down. God damn, it was disgusting. What do you think of Marco Rubio as a Spider-Man?
I think Marco Rubio was probably a male prostitute at some point in his life and would be good for a reboot of American Gigolo.
Right.
Which, you know, I mean, it's due for a reboot. That was done like back in the 70s, 80s with Richard Gere, back when he was playing with hamsters. Now you bring back Marco Rubio, you do the Marco Rubio story. I mean, I think even Marco Rubio is probably too old for American Gigolo now, but why not do the Marco Rubio story, a biopic with who's a hot young Latin, you know, playboy actor who'd be good for him today?
Huh. You know, what about if you wrote a biography, what would be the first sentence in Marco Rubio's biography if you were the writer, if you were the ghostwriter?
I remember the tongue entering my anus when I was lying in bed at my babysitter's house at age 5.
Hmm. What? How does someone like Marco Rubio go to bed at night? I mean, isn't there any sense of guilt or shame, or is the psychology of the person who is geared towards power? I mean, does power attract narcissists? So the people who gravitate towards power have this unempathetic, narcissistic drive that gains them power. Is power, the people who attain power, are they narcissists? Are those the ones that capture power? I mean, you know psychology. You're kind of gay that way. What do you think?
Man, you got way too deep for me. I don't know. It sounds like you've got some theories. Why don't you, come down off your high horse and, talk to us people down on the ground?
Well, let me say this. You know, like the new president, the president of China, this guy, there was always whispers of him being corrupt, basically jailing anyone who could be a competitor of his, anyone who threatened any of his financial interests.
What are you talking about, new president?
I didn't mean new president. I mean the guy who's in power.
He's been president for life.
Well, he's not been in office that long, but I think he's a couple of years into his second term. And if there was any question whether he was corrupt, well, he's answered all those questions by saying, I'm the president for life. How the fuck does he look himself in the mirror? And how the fuck do the Chinese people let him get away with that?
Dude,
I mean, how the fuck do people let that get away with that?
Let's back up. Because let me save yourself from sounding too stupid, okay? Look, the Chinese Communist Party is corrupt. That's not news. We've known about that for decades. It's all built on a system of corruption. It's built on a system of bribery, local officials. You got to belong to the party. You got to kick up your fucking payoff up to the people at the top. And that's how shit gets done there. It's their system. What do you want? What do you want from my life? That's the way the world works. We know that. China's corrupt. Chinese Communist Party is corrupt. Is that the point you're trying to make?
Yeah, I mean, kind of, you could look at the Republicans as having like this corrupt view of the world, and what they ended up with was Franken-Trump, right? So, I mean, the thing is, I can't even believe people in the Communist Party want this guy to, it's like he's gone rogue, because ultimately you want to keep your corruption under the wire, right? Under you want to kind of keep it sort of in stealth mode. But when somebody does something like that, I think the people are going to finally rise up and say, fuck all y'all, right? I mean, how can the people, want that?
Right.
Especially after the Cultural Revolution.
I gotta question your commitment to the pod at this point. I think you haven't thought this through.
Right.
I think you're making a lot of obvious points.
Uh-huh.
And I think that this is, part of a larger problem of your commitment to the pod. I want to know what you're going to do to improve.
What I'm going to do is just try to do 20 push-ups every morning, 20 push-ups before bedtime. Try to eat more salad.
Okay.
Okay. Why don't we start with that?
You brought a guest. We got a guest here.
Her name's May. She's Chinese.
Her name's May. She is female. She is Chinese. She is preparing for breast augmentation surgery.
That's correct.
We've had some other guests we've talked about on the show who've been, working on breast augmentation.
Right.
And we've got one here.
Right. Well, they call me the boob whisperer. And so May's going to get breast augmentation. Are you excited, May?
Yeah.
So May is excited. I mean, it's transformative. I've never heard this. I got too big of a breast enhancement. No woman has ever said that.
I've heard that before.
No.
I've heard of women actually, doing double surgery to reduce because they got too zealous the first time around.
You didn't hear that. He's fucking full of shit, May. Don't listen to him.
This guy just thinks you can never get him too big. He wants you to get double Z's. He wants you with a fucking wheelbarrow.
Don't listen to him, May.
May, come on over here. Come on over.
Aunt May's not going to come. Let's keep it to ourselves.
What are you, like, her puppet master?
No, I just know that May doesn't feel comfortable talking about this. And
well,
we
she can say that.
Okay. Let's move
listen,
on.
Listen. How long have you and May been dating? I want to talk a little bit about this.
May and I are very good friends, aren't we, May?
Yeah.
We're good friends.
You're just friends? You're not dating?
May and I, we go out and we have, like, a milkshake, and then we just kind of talk about, you know, just Chinese soap operas.
Do you hold hands?
May doesn't like that sort of stuff.
Do you kiss?
All right, let's move
No, we're not moving on. Wait a minute. Hold on now. Now, May, do you and El Greco talk about his love life? You don't talk about the love life?
No.
El Greco, do you talk about your love life with May? What's going on?
Not interesting.
Oh, you're not interested in talking about your love life? We always talk about your love life.
We will talk about that later. Okay.
Again, I think we have to question your commitment.
Okay, very good. All right, speaking of relationships and approach to relationships, I learned a valuable lesson today when I went to see my life coach.
What happened?
He says, I have historically not excelled at rapport, especially meeting new people. In the past, I think my approach, and this is for all the men out there, you can learn from my mistake, I sometimes bludgeon, like, women with information. You know, it's like, I do this and I do that, and I can do this and I went to that school. But you can understand, it seems like, don't you feel when you're meeting a new woman, you have to audition a little bit? Do you feel that way?
Everybody has to audition.
Right. But you have to balance that. And I think you've even said this before. You have to develop a rapport. And for all men out there listening, learn the word rapport, because certainly I have not excelled at rapport. I feel in the past, and I think incorrectly, that you have to assuage a woman's anxiety that you're not an expert. So you want to kind of, like, you know, kind of, what is it called? Front load with all the information of who you are. But I think ultimately it's more important to develop a rapport. And a rapport, let me quote the definition, because this is very valuable. It's a close and harmonious relationship in which the people or groups concerned understand each other's feelings or ideas and communicate well. For instance, she was able to establish a good rapport with the children. Synonyms: affinity, close relationship, understanding, mutual understanding, bond, empathy, sympathy, accord. I knew you were going to do that. I was just waiting for it. All right.
Okay.
So I think you've said this to me before when I have asked you, did I do a good job? What went wrong? And you're like, dude, did you ask her questions about herself? Mm-hmm. You have actually given me sage advice.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I've known in the history of men wanting to fuck and get pussy, talking about yourself never works. It's a turnoff. It makes women dry up.
Okay.
That pussy dries up. But at the same time, how do you balance, like, kind of auditioning, yet at the same time building a rapport? Or do you not, like, where do you put the accent? Because I think I've made the mistake in the past. And to a painful...
Well, let me tell you that, first of all, self-awareness, self-consciousness kills whatever kind of rapport you're trying to build. And so right off the bat, you're at a disadvantage because you are painfully self-conscious about what you're doing. You're going into this and you're thinking, am I talking enough about her? Am I asking her enough questions? Am I talking too much about myself? Am I building rapport? You can't think about it. You have to be in the moment. You have to be present. And, you know, that's just something that, like, you kind of just have to do naturally. And I think a lot of it comes through empathy.
Right. All right.
I don't know what any of that means. Those are just words. I'm just filling space with words because you created a word space that needed to be filled. You're fucking – huge need, your neediness, your need to fill you up with words, put those words in that word space.
I made you.
You made me do that.
I made you act stupid.
You made me do that.
All right. So what you said is true. I think from my personal experience, I've always felt confident and not self-conscious. It's just I needed to relearn the lessons. And the lesson is, of course, aim for a rapport by asking questions. It sometimes requires practice. So any guys out there, any women, anyone who wants to meet someone, practice asking questions. And maybe at first it'll be clumsy, because I've met people who wouldn't ask me a question at all, and I can't tell you how turned off it is. And I was talking to my therapist about women who escaped my charm, and it quite frankly could have been for any number of reasons. Maybe they had someone already, but maybe it was because I failed to build a rapport by trying to charm them with all the stuff I had going in my life. I could do this, I can do that. Aren't you charmed? Yeah. But in fact, it was at the expense of building a rapport.
Well,
so
that's
anyhow,
good.
That's the lesson.
That's good. That's the lesson that you learned that most of us already know, but we're glad that you're going back to remedial person school to learn how to be a person. And so we want to celebrate that you are raised, right? I'm sort of envisioning like the evolutionary scale of, you know, chimp to, you know, Lucy to Cro-Magnon man. And you're somewhere between like Lucy and Cro-Magnon man. And I want to honor that and celebrate that. Thank you.
I'm getting up to parity. What I just suggested today was in no way suggesting that I am more advanced than the average man. I'm getting to parity with a Neanderthal's approach to dating. I'm aiming for parity, not any more advanced than that.
Let's all celebrate and applaud the shaved chimp El Greco for his advancement up the evolutionary scale. You know, I also subscribe to the approach of ask questions, and I've often found in social situations the best question that I can ask is, ask me something about ham radios.
All right, so for those listeners, this is a bit of an inside joke. Monty here was in a bookstore, a very famous bookstore in Berkeley, and when he heard two nerds, let's call them what they are, nerds, talking about how you meet people at a party. And they were both a little kind of like they're probably engineering undergrads. And one goes, go ahead, you tell the story.
Well, the one guy's saying, you know, are you going to the party Saturday night? And they go, I don't go to parties. I never know what to say. And the other guy goes, oh, just use my technique. When I meet somebody at a party, I say, ask me something about ham radios. Which it's just stuck with me over the years. In fact, I think that's got to be a T-shirt. I think I gotta find a really awkward looking guy with the quote, "Ask me something about ham radios," because that's just you can just unpack that for days. I mean, first of all, he's not saying ask me something. He's not saying I'm interested in you and having a conversation. He's saying I'm interested in you finding out something that I think I'm really good at that I can impress you with. I'm interested in you not being a person, just being a thingy that I can talk at with my knowledge about ham radios that nobody cares about, but I'm really into. And that is kind of what's wrong with nerds. It's what's wrong with, you know, Silicon Valley and the tech culture and that whole fucking world is it's about like the fetishization of knowledge. It's what nerds are. The definition of a nerd is somebody who goes very deep into the minutia of a very narrow topic that nobody else cares about, but they're willing to find out all about it so that they know how to control it and master it, and so they can make things work that nobody else gives a shit about enough to care about, but we need. Like, we need our fucking computers to work, and we need our cell phones to work. We need them so that we can get shit done, like communicating to people, like, you know, distributing information, whatever. We just need it to work, like we need our fucking toilets to flush and our plumbing to work. And these nerds go in and they find out and they get very proud of their mastery of that information that nobody cares about, and they can't talk to other people who care about it as much as them. And so they say, ask me about ham radios, because they have nothing else to talk about.
All right. Well, You know, in hindsight, as I think about it, I love nerds. Nerds don't have attitude. Maybe this guy wasn't a nerd.
Nerds have so much attitude. Go to Silicon Valley and find these nerds. They feel so arrogant and superior to everybody else. They fetishize knowledge. They fetishize the mastery of arcane information. And they feel superior to other people who don't have the same mastery.
My definition of nerds differs from yours. For me, nerds are into what they're into, but they don't have an attitude. They're not pretentious. They're not consumed.
They're so pretentious.
They're not consumed with appearance. That's my opinion, our definitions of nerd. In fact, the guy in the library of which you speak may not have been a nerd at all. He just may have been just socially retarded.
He was a nerd. He had a lot of knowledge about ham radios, and he was so unabashedly proud of his knowledge of ham radios that he just
he would bludgeon a group. There'd be a group together, like old friends talking, you know, having a wine, and I could just see him tapping like two people on the shoulder, tap 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 tap, and then like they yes, and he's like, go ahead, ask me something about ham radios.
Exactly.
Right, just like totally without any sort of social agility.
Let's drive this Titanic back onto its course of colliding with an iceberg. I want to ask you, so you see a life coach. You don't really see a life coach. You see a psychologist. You go for therapy. You go for psychoanalysis.
No, more. I use him more in the role of as a life coach because I was resistant to psychotherapy. So I just
All he's done is he's repackaged psychotherapy as life coach because you feel more comfortable with it. He's doing the same thing with you under a different vocabulary.
Well, regardless, I certainly get a lot out of it. Sometimes,
what do you get out of it?
It's sometimes great just to have a professional kind of call you on your shit, kind of like get your ass back into gear, kind of let you know where you're failing, kind of helping unpackage other people's bullshit so you can kind of make sense of a complicated world or a complicated dynamic. Just stuff like that. Sometimes your friends can only do so much good. For
instance,
just rapport. We talked about rapport, how my desire to kind of bludgeon people with who I am or kind of flood them with information impedes my ability to make a intimate connection, develop a rapport that could lead to something richer. So that's impeded me. So it was good to kind of get back on track. I developed bad practices. I had developed bad habits. So I use him for that. And it's also kind of like you deal with some exotic personalities in the entertainment industry. So you like to have somebody help figure out what's the best way to phrase a response, how you manage a dynamic, you know.
Other words, psychotherapy.
Call it what you want, but I don't talk about mommy, although you could certainly wonder how much that plays into my ability to perceive the world. But I do have a question for you, because once again, you're kind of gay and into like this gay psycho talk. Do you consider yourself having narcissistic tendencies? I know I have narcissistic tendencies, but I've been told by professionals I'm not a narcissist, but really? I have those tendencies, and sometimes my tendencies are strong. I mean, do you have narcissistic tendencies?
Everybody has narcissistic tendencies. What everybody doesn't have is narcissistic personality disorder.
Right.
Everybody can be narcissistic at times.
Right. So the company where I just worked, so, you know, I was laid off.
Wait. Okay.
I'm getting to that. I'm feeding back into this narcissist. I'm going to give you an example.
No, but we got off the life coach.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just not that interesting. I just use him for information that helps me make better decisions. Because
once again, I question your commitment to the pod. Not wanting to, you know, you're getting very defensive about the life coach.
Well, then let's go.
Let me ask you about the life coach.
Go ahead.
Okay. Here's the thing. Psychotherapist, life coach, whatever you want to call it. Basically, these people, when are you cured? When does it end? When do they say, you no longer need my help? You no longer have to keep paying your bill. Go, butterfly. I release you into the wild. Be free. When does that happen?
Maybe it never happens.
Exactly.
But for me.
Exactly.
I see him on an need on a need basis. So I'll go like a year without seeing him, 2 years. And then all of a sudden, hey, man, I want to book you a couple sessions. And it's not every week. It's 2 weeks. So I have enough loaded up on my plate to talk about.
Hey, so, I like those kind of clients. You know, they come around once a year. It's kind of predictable. It's right at a time when, you know, look, who's going to turn away, you know, a client? My point is this. This is a business, you know, I mean, you get people coming in once a week, paying you, you know, whatever it is by the hour. You're never cured. In fact, you become dependent on it. You keep coming back, whether you're paying with insurance or out of your own pocket. It's steady business.
You know, I will say there, like, I do trust my therapist or my life coach very much, but we've had a couple issues where I go, you know what, I don't want to see this asshole anymore. One time I told him I didn't want to see him twice a week. I didn't want to see him once a week. I only want to see him twice a week. And we talked the whole session about that. So we had a triangulated relationship with my therapist.
So
right?
He basically charged you by the hour to negotiate with him about seeing him.
Right. And I also think, was he wanting to see me every week because he had financial problems? Is that kind of it? Because there were times when I didn't see him where I had financial problems. And he used to call me all the time. I think it was like, you know, during the early 2000s, like, hey, how you doing? Checking in. Like a life coach who's got, or a therapist who's got enough clients doesn't always have to be calling old clients.
It's sort of like a chiropractor. You ever seen a chiropractor and they keep calling you back when you're coming in?
Well, the bad ones do. The good ones don't. They don't need it. Like, you know, the guy over on Irving Street and 24th, he never called me. He's got enough business. But there was a guy I went to early on Chestnut. He was fucking horrible. You know, when it comes time to like 1, 2, crack your neck, it was 1, 2, fuck. Like, it didn't crack at all. He was just super incompetent, but he'd call every fucking week. They were awful.
There you go.
It was like an online pharmacy.
Anyway, what were you going to talk about now?
All right. So you know, when I was laid off, you know, when the company was bought by private equity, you know, you just knew it was coming. Private equity's going to, like, you know, lay off everyone, show a profit, and then try to flip the business. But it dawned on me, because I developed such a following on LinkedIn with my articles, and LinkedIn, you know, is kind of a radio station that likes to promote my shit. I go, God, I could, you know, write some crazy shit, not about the company, just by myself, but the company would be guilty by association, right? I could start writing these like articles about crazy sex topics, and by virtue of the fact that I work at this company, they would be kind of guilty by association, because when I worked at them, they very much guarded what I would like publish on my own on LinkedIn. And so recently the CEO of this company sent me an email that was kind of like, hey, I was going to give you a letter of recommendation if you said you didn't work here anymore on LinkedIn.
Because you've got a following and it's associated with the company. And he wants you to publicly disavow your association with the company so that anything else that you write isn't associated with the company, essentially.
Exactly. And he kind
But here's the thing. Yeah. He doesn't have a fucking leg to stand on, because he doesn't own your personal LinkedIn account. That's yours.
But he just wanted to list it that I'm no longer with the company now, because I had from 2013 to present, because this just happened. And
whatever. It doesn't matter. He's got no leg to stand on.
I mean, I could keep it as present, right? Because, you know,
if you want, it doesn't matter.
Right. But he did it and sort of like, oh, one more thing. I just noticed on your LinkedIn profile. So I'm sure he was coached in how to do it, because.
So how many followers do you have on LinkedIn?
Well, it's not so much followers, but some of the articles I write get like 40,000 views and like thousands and thousands of likes.
So why would you let that go? You got to keep publishing.
I do keep publishing on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
But I think he doesn't want me to write.
Yeah, I got that. I'm just saying. No, of you course know, I you keep. Should. You've got if you've got that many followers of your articles, you got to keep publishing so that, you know, you retain that readership, because most of those people probably don't give a shit where you work. They just want to read your articles.
Right. I know. So I'm doing it. It got me an interview with this company recently, this this Chinese British guy. It was kind of nice talking to a Chinese guy with a British accent. We got along very well. He read all my articles and liked them. And then he goes, "Hey, I wanted you to talk tomorrow." Like, they wanted to move fast. With the Indian VP of marketing, are there certain ethnic groups you don't interview well with? For me, it's always been Indians. I always don't like.
Really? Because they're all the same, aren't they?
I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, you know, someone like this entrepreneur said recently, like, I think it was Elon Musk said, Indians aren't very creative, you know, when it comes to like.
He didn't say it. If he'd have said that, that would have been like all over the
but
news.
Someone did say that. But I do feel. Historically, I just have not been able to kind of have good interviews with that particular group. Like,
really?
He told the guy, he goes, "I'm not very technical. I'm technical. It's just I don't want to be a project manager."
Okay.
I don't want to be a. Have you ever wanted to project manage anything in your fucking life?
I don't know, but I sure haven't wanted to talk about it on a podcast.
All right. Okay. Well, project management. I. You know what I'd rather do? I'd rather wash down a handful of razor blades with castor oil than be a project manager.
I'd rather drive a nail through my left nut than say the word project manager.
I'd rather jack off with sandpaper.
All right.
What would you rather do?
Move on.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you like to put a glass rod in your urethra and smash it with a ball peen hammer?
Wasn't that a form of torture in some war?
I heard it was like Vietnam War or something. Like they put a glass rod in like the prisoner's urethra. How the fuck did they get it in there?
I think what they did is they put a very brittle glass rod down your urethra while your cock is hard, and then as your cock softens, it breaks and, you know, shreds your urethra.
Oh, fucking A. Wow. I have to question your commitment to this podcast and your lack of commitment to my new gore podcast.
Your new gore podcast? What's that?
I'm joking. There should be a gore podcast where, like, just two idiots talk about the goriest things that the world has to offer.
You haven't explored the podcast world very, very good.
Oh, there must be deeply podcasts just devoted to that, huh?
Again, I have to question your commitment.
Okay. So what else do you want to talk about? I will talk about this. Well, to finish up my talk about my life coach, you know, sometimes you go and try to maximize the money you spend, and it can be a lot of money, so you can learn about yourself. You can face painful issues, things that are hard to talk about, things like, you know, abusive things your parents may have said, like horrible things that have happened that have shaped the chemistry in your brain. But I use him more as sort of like a kind of a crystal ball, sort of like a... Who's the guy? What was the name of the guy who helped other men pick up women? What's his name? You know, the guy with the long nose.
Cyrano de Bergerac?
Yeah, I kind of use him in as a Cyrano de Bergerac. Like, hey, how do I meet her? How do I hook up with her? So can you imagine like spending money to use your therapist for that purpose?
I could imagine you doing it. Yeah. Well, so does he give you anything that works? Because this guy obviously is a bit of an entrepreneur. Maybe he's got a sideline he doesn't realize as one of these pickup artist guys. You know, what was the guy, Mackie, that Tom Cruise
played?
I
thought maybe you were talking about Biopharma Bro. What was that guy's name?
No, that guy had nothing to do with pickup.
I'm joking, but you can imagine him putting out a book like that because he was so sleazy. His name was Pharma Bro or something.
Pharma Bro has probably never been laid.
He just got 7 years.
Yeah, he did.
How did he fuck up so bad? Like, I just think he just had a target on his back, right?
Like he was a victim? That's what he tried to get everybody to believe at his sentencing.
That he was a victim?
He cried on cue and stuff.
Everything was weaselly about him, right? I mean, he seemed destined to go down.
Martin Shkreli.
Yeah. Even his name.
Well, yeah, I mean, he did the typical, you know, sleazy... talk about, you know... I mean, we were talking about nerds who become overconfident in their specialized technical skills. He is a textbook case of that.
He's not a fucking nerd. He was just a sleazebag. Do you think Jared Kushner's a nerd?
I don't know. No, probably not. But Martin Shkreli is definitely a nerd. He has high intelligence, and he learned a lot in depth about stock research and stock trading and became overconfident in his abilities, believed that he was some kind of genius, and believed that, you know, there were no consequences to his actions because he was smarter than everybody and could outsmart everyone, showed up at a hearing in Congress where he was subpoenaed and was, you know, just openly contemptuous of the whole process and the senators, and basically, you know, ensured that he was going to be sent to prison just through his hubris.
Now, what exactly did he do? When they say he defrauded investors, was that it? I mean, was he legitimately guilty of fraudulent behavior?
I don't know all of the details. I didn't look into it that deeply, but there are all kinds of
But you're an accountant.
There are all.
You're not listening to me.
There are all kinds of regulations that you have to comply with when you are managing other people's money. And he, as I understood it, probably took money from one fund and used it for purposes of another fund, which is illegal, not to mention that he probably, I think, violated various regulations with the SEC as well. Anyway, none of that is fact-checked, but...
Right.
Anyway, you know, there's nothing that exotic about what he did. He's a stock hedge fund fraudster. There's one every week. Throw a rock, you'll hit one. I mean,
right. So if he had gone to that congressional hearing and was truly, truly apologetic, sincerely apologetic, the 7-year sentence might have gone out the door, right? He would have just been penalized and fined, and then
if he had been contrite from the beginning. And if he had from the beginning said, look, I got in over my head. I didn't really know what I was doing. I made some careless mistakes. I'm very sorry. Probably there's a good chance that, yeah, he would have gotten a sentence that was more in line with what the defense was asking for, which was a year and a half, which I think was the minimum sentence under the sentencing guidelines. But the problem was that he kept demonstrating again and again that he wasn't contrite, that he was a risk to the public because he was probably going to do this again, and that he needed to really, you know, be punished in order to get it through to him not to do this. He was doing things like after he had been indicted, he would go online and he made a tweet asking people to get a lock of Hillary Clinton's hair while she was campaigning. He would just do crazy shit like that and, you know, seem to not care at all about the consequences.
So because you have homosexual leanings and you're a fruity and you swish about to and fro and you know a lot about the psychology, what is the psychology of a Jared Kushner? Like, I would say it's exactly like Martin Scorsese. Like, it's just they're the smartest guys. They'll never get caught. There's going to be never repercussions. And when it usually hits them, it's like an anvil falling from the sky, right? They can't even believe it until the day of sentencing. It's kind of reminds me of, remember the Teflon Don? Remember that guy? I forgot what his name was. Not Maria Sorvino. Not her. But who was the Teflon Don? Oh, Gotti. John Gotti. For years, it was assumed that they would never, ever be able to bring him down. He was Teflon. And then as soon as they had the bulldog testify against him, it was all over. It was this moment of devastation, like the game is finally up. Don't you hope that something like that happens to Jared Kushner? Because it just seems so obvious this guy has a complete disregard for ethics. And, I mean, his father was a criminal. I mean, like father like son, right? I mean, don't you wish something like that would happen?
Is there anything left for me to answer, or were the answers pretty much all packed into your question?
See, this goes back to me having inability to form a rapport.
True.
So go ahead. Just try to unpackage what I just said and make
something
of it.
Because you are a shaved ape somewhere between Lucy and Cro-Magnon Man, you don't keep up with the news, and you don't follow, and you don't know that he's actually pretty close to being indicted. Mueller is clearly closing in on him, among other people in the Trump circle.
But he doesn't look nervous.
What I mean, What do you want him to do? Come out on national television and say, I'm so nervous. Oh.
He could bite his nails a little bit, you jerk.
Well,
you know what else he could do? He could have a little twitchy eyebrow. Or he could have like darting eyes. Well, or like that sort of like
he kinda
sweat.
He kind of naturally looks, you know, like a pasty villain. I think that's just his look all the time. But, I mean, you brought up the, as far as this fucking psychology, and I don't know all about that, but, I mean, you brought up the key thing, which is just, this is a very plain case of the apple not falling far from the tree. The guy's father was a sleazy, low-life real estate criminal like Donald Trump. That's why, you know, they know each other and they're in cahoots and, he actually went to prison. He went to, Club Fed and, you know, played golf at a fucking minimum security federal prison for a little while because of criminal activity that he did. And, you know, that's the kind of training that Jared Kushner got. I'm sure Jared Kushner is very resentful and spiteful toward the federal government for what it did to his father, and sees this as partly his opportunity to get in and, you know, undermine the system or, you know, beat the system. And, you know, when you're taught, when you're trained in that kind of crucible, then, you know, that's probably seals your fate. So I don't know what's going to become of the Mueller investigation. Nobody does. It's all speculation. It's created the biggest industry of media speculation that I've seen in a long time. When it finally does come out, it better be really good, and, you know, it better really fucking stick it to some of these people, or else that guy and the whole process of having a an independent counsel is going to be come under question.
Right. I mean, it's just sort of like, hey, have at it. You know, all of a sudden we'll be no better than any other banana fucking republic, right? I mean, if these people can get away without any penalization, we're just a banana republic.
Well, we already are. Look at who's in the fucking White House.
What do you think of Condoleezza Rice? You know, I remember there was a basketball player. He was a forward for the Nets, and he once called Karl Malone, not by his nickname, the mailman. You know what he called him?
Mm.
Uncle Tom.
Mm-hmm.
What about Condoleezza Rice? I mean, there's people.
You mean Aunt Tom?
There's people who should know better. What the fuck is her problem? She's like, we just need to end this. I mean, like, what a fucking sycophant.
What did she say?
She's not an ass kicker. She's a butt-licking, salad-tossing fucking sycophant. She's like, but we just need to wrap up this this Russian investigation. We just need to wrap it up. We need to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no one wants it.
Yeah, you know, she's just one of the other talking heads carrying water for the Republican Party. Look, you want to talk about who's really a sycophant? She doesn't even begin to hold a fucking candle to Kellyanne Conway. That bitch, you want to talk about, she is a bottom bitch. But, you know that every pimp has his bottom bitch. He's got his bitch. He's got his stable. He's got his hoes who, you know, they come and go. It's a revolving cast, and that's what Trump has, because look at, you know, what, his 19th fucking resignation last week. Gary Cohn, who was in the inner circle, who everybody thought would never leave, who was, you know, they thought he was down to clown with Trump. He's out now because he's like the fucking, you know, the last straw was this tariff bullshit. Okay, but in the same week, the bottom bitch, the absolute hoe who is most down for Trump, Kellyanne Conway, it comes out, she violated the Hatch Act. We knew about this. We knew that she had gone on national television or whatever and done commercials for Ivanka. This chick will lick the sweat off of Trump's balls until the day she dies. This guy, Trump's going to go to prison. He's going to be in prison. She is going to be in the cell with him, down on her knees, down to clown with Trump until the last day. She is his most loyal bottom bitch, and she is fucking crazy. Now, you want to talk about Condoleezza Rice? Forget it.
No, this is an apple and orange, chimp. Listen, that's her job. Her job is to be, as you say, down to clown, which I don't think, I know that gets thrown, I mean, that's political jargon. I don't even think that's inappropriate for a podcast. But this is her job. Of course, that's what she's going to do. But so that's already understood. But what's a Condoleezza Rice doing? I mean, she should know better. This is like somebody who should know better, right? So I don't blame Kellyanne Conway. Of course she's doing what she's doing. It's like, of course, it's doesn't defy anyone's expectations. But Condoleezza Rice should know better. But she's always been a salad-tossing, sycophant, subservient, and just lies around on the taxpayers' dollar from country to country doing shit. She's just a worthless piece of shit.
Okay. I'm glad that we got that established. She's right. A worthless piece of shit.
She's a worthless piece of shit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having me.
Yeah. So,
all right, I'll be here all night.
So, listen, I do want to talk a little bit about, have you ever tried a dash cam? These things are becoming more and more popular.
No, I'm not in Russia, but if I were in Russia, I'd have one.
I know they're popular.
I'd have a dick cam.
I know they're popular in Russia.
Because I'm tired of women, like, biting my dick and thrashing it about.
Well, you're getting to my point, which is, we know that the...
Hey, May, how's it going?
I'm good.
Okay.
Can we have one conversation?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm over here.
All right.
Yeah.
Take
okay.
it away.
Okay. So we've got dash cams, which are the little camera you put on your dash because you're like the kind of person who wants to, you want to record anybody who might have violated the law on the road, who might have cut you off, and you've got video on them, and somebody who might have, a bicyclist who might have gotten too aggressive. And you've got your video that you can show to the cops or your insurance company.
Right.
And so it's kind of the whole, outrage culture. Now, it's no coincidence that this has happened at the same time as the call for body cams on cops. We've got cops now in many places that because of – and look, I think it's probably a good idea because we know we've got a problem with police brutality, okay? And so it's probably a good idea to have the body cams, although we know, the cops can manipulate also, when the body cam is on and that kind of thing. But here's my point. Body cams on civilians. Body cams on people. Look, everywhere I go, everywhere that I walk roaming this earth, there are microaggressions that are committed against me every day. Now, some of these might rise to the level of...
I love the term microaggression.
Some of these might rise to the level of litigation, of liability that could be brought as lawsuits in court. And, as a smart investor, you know that it's good to diversify your portfolio. You always have a portfolio of lawsuits going.
ABS, always be suing.
Exactly. Always be suing in multiple jurisdictions. You're going to have most of them get thrown out, but one of them's going to stick and one of them's going to pay off. So the body cam is a way to collect evidence and have lawsuits going in multiple jurisdictions. You create a whole system where you take your microaggressions that you've captured on video, you upload them and prepare an automated filing, and you're just firing off lawsuits constantly, and you create a passive income stream that comes in through your body cam. Now, sometimes your body cam is not going to necessarily generate evidence for litigation, but you can still take it to the court of Twitter. You can still take this and post it on Twitter and humiliate people and ruin people's lives and bring their careers down by having the body cam footage of the microaggression posted in the court of social media.
It's right out of Black Mirror, my man.
Well, fuck, this I'm not talking science fiction, you jackass. This is real.
Listen,
I'm an entrepreneur, okay? Guys like you don't get it. I think outside the fucking box, okay? This is a business I'm pitching here, okay?
Right.
And if anybody wants to invest, call now. But this is real, and look,
there should be a lending tree for judges. So what you do is you wear this body cam, then you post it, and then you go to lending tree for judges, and you pick the judge that you'd like to oversee your case. And he's like, yeah, I think I could go ahead and rule in your favor. And then you go ahead and move from there.
Well, look, We know what happened to Google Glass, okay? That was a dumb idea, again, because it was invented by nerds, and they
whatever. What did happen to that?
It bombed because there was a total backlash because, again, it was the whole thing was marketed.
What the whole fucking thing was it? You were wearing glasses that you could access the internet from your glasses with a blink of your eye?
You had these fucking glasses, and you put them on, and you could record in real time. So you could have video that comes in real time that gets uploaded to wherever. You could also bring up, information about shit that you saw, and nobody knew what you were looking at. So it was very invasive of privacy. But listen, the idea is if everybody's wearing them, nobody's private. But nobody did wear – the only people who wore them were Silicon Valley nerds because they're expensive, and they became this fucking like status symbol, again, of the nerd – saying, I'm more technically advanced than you. That's why I have these Google glasses. And so everybody started hating these people and calling them glassholes. And it bombed. And it became a fucking total business failure, as it should have been. Okay? But back up. Body cams. Body cams, different. This is body cam. Okay? And so body cams can be marketed differently because everybody can wear one of these, and just like dash cams, there's a financial incentive. The financial incentive
there should also
being,
be a beat off cam, and a beat off cam is just like it comes with a hoodie, so you can feel extra creepy.
Well, there's no limit to what you could do with it. I mean, there's no limit to what you. I mean, yeah, it could be the beat off cam. I mean, we already know about cam girls, and they make money too. But I'm really thinking that this is about the justice system.
Lawsuits. Yeah, so you upload the video, you go to Lending Tree for Judges, where you pick a judge that you think would rule favorably over this potential lawsuit that you're bringing. And I think it's a good business model. It makes sense.
Where did the loans come in?
Well, so Lending Tree, you get to pick a...
lender.
Right, but Lending Tree for Judges is kind of like you can pick the judge that you would like to have overrule your case.
Okay.
So it's like, you have judges and you get to pick. So it's just the same sort of model. You find the judge that you think is going to be best suited for your particular case, for your particular lawsuit.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break.
No, we're not taking a break. We're not taking a fucking break. Listen, your commitment to the pod again is fucked up. I don't want to take a break. I don't want to edit this thing. It's going to be continuous, uncut, no breaks. That's the way we roll.
All right. How about this? Let me get May home because I have to get May home. Then we can like talk about continuing.
No, we're going to continue now and then you can get May home because we got some more to talk about. And I think May needs to be here. Here's what's up. Look, May, I'm sorry, but, I asked you at the outset. Do you want to, can we call you an Uber? Do you want to hang out? I mean, you knew what you were getting into. I think you really ought to come over and participate a little bit because you're going to want to get in on this next action. All right. Now, listen. In the past week, now we've talked a lot on the pod about your various women's and your various dalliances, okay? In the past week, I was contacted by one of your lady friends. She told me not to contact you, not to tell you that she contacted me, and so I'm not going to say who it was, but she contacted me. She was desperate. She was obviously emotionally worked up. And she had some, I think she was hurt. I think she was feeling hurt by you. Now, we know that you have, a lot of different connections, okay? Different relationships, sort of like your portfolio that you invest in, and you've got, multiple going at any one time. One of them might pay off. A lot of them aren't going to. What I want to know is, are you honest with these ladies? Do you tell them, do you guys have the talk about, monogamy? Is there any kind of exploitation going on here? Are they seeing other people? Are you seeing other people? When is it in your relationships that you make some kind of arrangement about monogamy with your various portfolio? Your thoughts, please, Shave Chimp. Speak.
I really don't have a thought on this.
Get closer to the mic.
I don't have a thought on this.
When do you have the conversation about monogamy?
I don't. I got to get me home.
No, you just see, this is, again, you're trying to just get out of it, and I'm trying to talk about something that the listeners care about.
All right. We can talk next time. I really got to get her home. And, like, Kikue and I were supposed to have, like, a little bite to eat later.
I don't care.
We'll talk later.
Hit it, Joe!
You all know my Uncle Monty, don't you?
Monty the Magnificent at your service!
Tell me it's money!
You coming to see Uncle Marty's big benefit show?
You know, a long time ago, being crazy meant something. Nowadays, everybody's crazy.
Ashtrays can't talk.